The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parashah is Parashas Bahalei Sichor. The major principle in all of life in this world is what is known as Schar ve'Einish, reward and punishment. The Ramban writes at the end of Parshas Bo, Im yaseh ha-mitzvah yatzlichenu schore v'im yavor aleihem yachriseno onshei ha-kol b'gzeres elyon, that the person is judged in accordance to merit. If he has fulfilled the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, he receives reward accordingly. If he has transgressed the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, then he will receive, heaven forbid, punishment accordingly, all in accordance to the decrees of Hashem. And this is why the power of Bechira was given to the person, a free choice. The Rambam elaborates in Hilchos Tshuva that if a person did not have free will, free choice to choose between good and evil, then there wouldn't be possible the whole concept of reward and punishment, because he gets reward for something that he does, and he receives punishment for something that he should have done and he didn't, or he transgressed. So it has to be dependent on he and he alone. And therefore, person was put in this world where he could choose and he could do and he could gain merit. Whether he receives his reward or his rebuke in this world or the next world, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's calculations. Some he might receive in this world, the majority in the next world. These are other calculations. Now this is something that Kol Ben Das, anyone with any intellect, understands. But the Chazal, the sages, come and tell us something even more. And that is, Shahakol B'mida U'B'mishkol, that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to us, dishes out to us, not only is it a reward for good and a punishment for evil, but it's with an enormous exactness, the mida or the mishkol, with an enormous measure. And this is relevant to this week's parsha. Both, it could be in many places, but both right at the beginning and right at the end. The parsha begins, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor, Daber el Aaron v'amalta ale elov. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, speak to Aaron and say to him, that when you light the neiros, the candles which were in the sanctuary, then he is told how he should light them. The sages ask, the Chazal ask, Rashi brings, lo manisma cho parshas amaneira le parshas anasim. What is the relevance of these two parshas? In last week's parsha, we spoke a great deal, the second half of the parsha, about the Yud Beis Nesim, the 12 princes, the kings, the leaders of every shevet, of every tribe, as each one brought their gifts for the Chanukah Samizbeach, for the dedication of the new altar, after the sanctuary was built and put in place. Now, the Torah all of a sudden starts with Aaron and the lighting of the candles, the lighting of the menorah. What does one have to do with the other? The Fishik Shira Aaron Chanukah Sanasim, Chol She'oz Daita, Shelohoya Imahem Bechanukah, Laihu Veleshifte. Because Aaron and the Kahanim were left out. The 12 Nesim, princesses that came, did not include Shevet Levi. Aaron was a descendant, and all of his sons who became the Kohanim, they were descended from Levi. And Levi was excluded from all of the gifts, the dedication of the new altar. The 12 tribes, the 12 princesses that came, that were 12 besides Levi. It was Ephraim and Manasseh. Yosef was counted as two. And therefore, Chol Shudaita, he had a moment of weakness. Because here there was this great event, and everybody participated, except he and his family, and his whole shevet, his whole tribe. Omer la HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecho Shelcho Gdeilu Mishalehem, Shato Madliku Meiti Vesaneros. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that you are greater than them. You are greater than them. And since you are greater than them, you will have something which is even greater than they had. They had the Chanukas HaMizbeach, the dedication of the altar. You will have the lighting of the menorah, of the candles, which was every day. Not only when the Mishkan was first erected, but every day during the time of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdosh. Now, we're not going to go into why the dafka, the menorah, and why is the menorah greater, and so on. But we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives out his rewards with a great exactness, that everyone, every shevet, deserved to participate in the dedication of the sanctuary. But Shevet Levi deserved more. Therefore they were held back and they were saved for something greater. This is why this parsha begins with, speak to Aaron and tell him about his mitzvah of the lighting of the candles. We see that at the end of the parsha also. The end of the parsha, the Torah tells us about the bad words, Loshon Hara, that Miriam and Aaron spoke against their brother Moshe. Because Moshe, after the giving of the Torah, did not return to his wife Tzipora. HaKadosh Baruch Hu became very angry. How could you speak against Moshe? Moshe was the greatest prophet we ever had. He was the king. How do you dare speak against him? And therefore Miriam was stricken with tzaras, with a disease similar to leprosy. The halacha is, the law is, we learned it last week, that when someone is stricken with this disease, so they have to go chutz mimachne, they have to go out of the entire camp, all three camps. So at the end of the parsha it states, "Vatisoger Miriam michutz lemachane shivush yomim." Miriam was locked out of the camp for 7 days until her tzaras would heal. V'yom le'nosa ad he'osef Miriam. And the nation did not carry on with their journeys until Miriam was allowed to go back into the camp. V'achar nosu amechatzeres. And only afterwards did they carry on with their journey to Chatzeros. V'yachanu b'midbar poron. And they camped in the desert of Purim. Now they could have carried on with their journeys because she could have come with the camp, except she would have had to walk on the outside. But they chose not to. They chose to wait until she could join the camp again. Now why? So Rashi again brings from HaChazal, Zeh HaKoved Cholak LeHamokom. They wanted to give Miriam honor. This was Al-Pi Hashem, through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bishvil sho'achas nis'akfa l'meshe keshuhu shlach li'yor. Shenemar v'teisasav achese meirochek l'das l'deo ma ye'osaloi. When Moshe was put into the river by his mother in the basket to escape the soldiers of Pare, Miriam stayed alongside of the river to keep watch and to see what would to know what would happen, so she could report to her mother. And she stayed there until the daughters of Pare, the daughter of Pare and her maids, came to bathe, and then they took Moshe. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to pay her back for that. So since she gave that kovod, that honor to Moshe, where she wouldn't leave him alone, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the nation will have to wait for her when she's out of the camp and not carry on with their journeys until she's able to return to the camp. Here we see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays back on every act, and with his cheshbon, with his calculation. We could, well, this we'll deal with soon. So, we see that not only does HaKadosh Baruch Hu pay a person, but he has an exactness. Now, there's a source for all of this that we're saying in the Mishnah. The Mishnah brings in Masech Tesota the first parak, Daf Ches Amud Beis. B'mida she'adam modeid bo modeid in lei. In accordance to the measure that a person uses, this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu measures what he gives to him. That means that exactly in accordance to what the person does, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to him. If it's something good, it's good. If it's not good, it's not good. This is what is known as Mido Keneged Mido. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay the person an exactness in accordance with how he paid Hashem. Now here the Mishnah is speaking about the Sota, the adulterous woman. That's what brings this whole discussion here. But the Gemara is going to go on to discuss this in many different facets and other cases. But it starts with that. So it states, for example, he cost her es atzma la avera hamokam nivla hi. The adulteress went and she made herself beautiful, and she made herself attractive to the adulterer. And because of this, she created a churban. She went and she was disloyal to her husband. She created the churban abayis, the destruction of the home. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays her back. But in the process of paying her back, that is done through to the adulterous woman, is where the kohanim make her look very ugly and despicable. And why is that? That was to destroy what she did for Avera. She went and she made herself very, very beautiful. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu's din, his mishpat, requires that she is made very nivla, very ugly and despicable. And then the Gemara goes through to explain on every kol prat uprat, every detail of the process that happens to her was all because of something. It doesn't just happen out of the blue, but this was all retribution for exactly what she had done. Then the Gemara comes, and this is on that test, Seif Amud Aleph. Tona Rabbonan. Seitan Nosnei Nehu B'mishen Aroilo. The adulterous woman, she placed her eyes on someone that was not for her. Ma shebiksho le'nitan lo, u'ma shebiyodei not luhu mimenu. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you want something that's not yours, then not only you will not get that, but you will lose what is yours. Because the end of the adulterous woman is that she doesn't marry the adulterer and she has to leave her husband. Now this is the mida keneged mida. You want something and you want to take something that's not yours, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take something from you that is yours. Now the Gemara says a klal, a principle, which applies to everything. Whoever puts his eyes on something which is not his, wants to take something which is not his, he will not get that. But even worse, that you wanted to take something, he wanted to take something that was not his, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take away from him what he is his. Now where do we see this? We see this firstly by the original serpent. The original serpent wanted to kill Adam HaRishon, the first man. He wanted him to eat from the tree so he could marry Chava. So he saw Chava, the wife of Adam, and he was the role of the adulterer. He wanted Chava. What happened? What he wanted, he never got. And what he had, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you wanted something that's not yours, I'll take away from you what is yours. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Amati, where do we see that something was taken away from him that was his? Ani Amati Yimelech HaKol Beim Evachayo. I said you will be the king over all of animal life in the world. Akshav Oruhu Mikol HaBeim HaKol HaChai Sasodeh. Now you are cursed from all of the animals. The serpent was on top. Now every animal hates him. Ani amati yahalech bekomas kufa. I had said that you will walk upright. The serpent was the only animal that was given legs. He was the only creation outside of man. Akshav al gechein chayelech. Now you are cursed and you will crawl on your belly. He took away his legs, and not only took away his legs, but he has shorter legs, if he has any leg, than any other creature. He crawls on his belly. Because you wanted something that was not yours. So now I will react and take away what is yours. Ani amati yimachol amaychol odom. I had said that you would eat what man would eat. Akshav ofer yeochol. Now you will eat from the dust of the earth. Who am I? Ereg es Adam versus Chava. You had said that you will kill Adam and you will marry Chava. Akshav evo oshis beinocho veinu isha uvein zarecho uvein zaro. Now I have cursed you, where there will be forever. There will be hatred between women and you, and between all of her seed and your seed. In other words, you wanted a close relationship. I will make it where you're two extremes. Right? That your seed will try to kill her, and she and her seed will try to kill you. So that's what the principle that we learn. Then the Gemara mentions V'chein Motzino B'Kayin. This same principle we found with Kayin, with Kerach, with Bilam, the Deig, Achitefel, Gachasi, Avisholom, Adimiyahu, Uziyahu, Homan. Shenosna Einehem B'Mei Shrei Lehem, Ashibik Shrei Nidin Lehem, Ashibiyodim Natlu Mehem. They wanted something that was not theirs. Not only did HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevent them from getting what was not theirs, but even took away what was theirs. We don't have time to go through all of these, but we'll mention two. In the next 2 weeks, we'll be learning Parshas Korach. Korach was, firstly, he was a very, very influential, powerful person. Because he stood up to challenge the leadership and the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, who could challenge the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that made all of the... He destroyed Paroi. He split the sea. He went and he executed the 10 plagues. He was the king, the Melech. he had his whole Sanhedrin, Shivim Zakenim, 70 elders. Who could challenge Parah? Excuse me, who could challenge Moshe Rabbeinu? But nevertheless, Kerach did it. And he had a following. He had a following of 250 Nesiei HaEdo, who were the leaders of the congregation. Now, how did he manage this? Bikorach himself was an extremely powerful and influential person. Firstly, he himself was from Shevet Levi, he was Mishpocha. You see, when if you're from Mishpocha, from the same family, then it brings you right into the inner circle. Most people never even spoke to Moshe. But he was a first cousin of Moshe Rabbeinu. Their fathers were brothers. And he himself came from this illustrious Shevet Levi. That was the first thing. And not only from the illustrious Shevet Levi, but from the family of Kohos, which was the prize family of Levi. And Kohos is the same family that Moshe, Amram came from, and Moshe, and Aaron, and Miriam. So he had tremendous yichus, and secondly, he was a Levi. And thirdly, he was enormously wealthy. Somehow he managed, when they went out of Egypt, he managed to tap, it seems, the treasures of Pharaoh and of Yosef. And he went out with enormous wealth. There's a Gemara that quotes somehow he had, I think it's 300, that he went out with 300 donkeys that were carrying just trunks of keys. See, just trunks of keys to all of his treasure chests, of what he was hauling out of Egypt. So you put all this together, he was a very, very powerful. That's why the Parshas Kerach was such a great event, insofar as that it was a real threat to Moshe and Aaron. Now, he had plenty. He had yichus, he had power, he had wealth. What more did he want? He wanted more. What was his whole bone of contention? Why was he grinding axes? Because, well, he came to say that Moshe took the leadership and he gave the kohuna, he became the melech, the king, and he gave the kohuna to his brother Aaron. So in other words, he's taking all of the royalties and sharing it with the immediate family. That's what he came, but he had another axe to grind, because the head of the family, he felt that he should have been, when the Nesim were appointed, so he felt that he should have been appointed as the head of that family, that particular family. At any rate, he wanted what was not his. All right, so we'll say he wasn't successful. No, it wasn't that he wasn't successful. He wasn't successful in not getting what he wanted, but he lost everything that he had. He lost his yichus, and he lost his power, and he lost his wealth, because it states that the earth opened up and took in everything from he and his family and everything and all of their possessions. That's why one must be very, very careful. Don't try to take something which doesn't belong to you, because not only will the person end up not getting it, but he'll lose what even belongs to him. We'll take one more example that the Gemara mentions, Haman. Haman was a very powerful person, enormously powerful. Haman was Mishnah LeMelech. He was viceroy to the most powerful king in the world. Kuv Kov Zayin Medinais. Ahasuerus ruled over 127 states. And the Gemara says that was Misefer Eilat Sefer, from one end of the world to the other. So he was an absolute monarch, and he was an absolute king, sovereign of the entire world. Haman was his viceroy, Mishnah LeMelech. He had so much trust in Haman that the royal signet ring, which could sign all documents, he took and he gave to Haman. Now, on top of that, it states that Haman was a very, very wealthy man, Rav Oshroi. told his wife about Rav Bonham, Rav Ashray. He was extremely wealthy. And besides the fact that Ahasuerus had given him a palace and whatnot. And on top of that, Haman would speak about Rav Bonham, he had 10 sons, which probably gave all 10 sons, every one of them, a governmental royal position. So Haman had everything. He was on top of the world. Now, wasn't enough for him. He couldn't. And everybody was commanded to bow to him. One man wouldn't bow to him. It was Mordecai. That bothered him. But he should have forgotten about it. He's got enough. So it nos the ain of a mesha ain of shalai. He wanted what that man had and the Jews. What happened? Not only he didn't get it, but he lost his life. His 10 sons were hung. And whatever he had was given to Esther and Mordecai. Eventually, the palace came to Mordecai. The signet ring came to Mordecai. The sovereign, the viceroy, that came to Mordecai. So v'chein Haman. And the Gemara mentions here so many of them. States v'chein motzina v'kain, Korach, Bilam, Daig, Achitefel, Gachasi, Avisholam, Adinoyohu, Uziyohu, Haman. Nos neinem b'mayshein ereilehem, ashebikesh leinitlem, ashebiyodam notlu b'mehem. They put their eyes on something that shouldn't have been for them. And instead of getting it, not only they didn't get it, but they lost even what they had. Then the Gemara goes further. But before that, the Maral explains, well, firstly, the simple meaning as to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with everyone in the same manner, in the same midah, the same measure that he deals himself, which is known as midah kenegen midah. The simple explanation is given because this way a person can learn what's happening to him and why it's happening to him. If, heaven forbid, something bad happens to a person, if he examines and gives thought as to what in particular is happening to him, then he has a way, perhaps, of finding out why it's happening, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with the individual in the same way that he dealt with Hashem in regards to the mitzvahs of Hashem. And v'chein b'midas hatov. If a person, something is good happening to a person, we once gave a shiur, it was for Yom Kippur, that many times people will ask, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? It's common for rabbis to get calls. Rabbi, can you tell me, why am I having so much sorrow? This is happening, and the business is not good, and the children are not good, and this is, the wife is not good, and so forth and so on. Why is this happening to him? See? But never does a rabbi get a call. Rabbi, perhaps you can explain to me, why is my business going so well? Why are my children turning out so good? Why is my marriage so good? Never. I've spoken to all the rabbis, I never heard such a quote. And that's not right. That's not right. Because the Gemara says, Kishem shechai vodem levorech al atev, kachai vodem levorech al ra. Things don't just happen to a person. And we brought from many chazals as Gemaras, Gemara Masechet Megillah, where the sages would constantly go to someone and they would ask, if a person lived to 70 years old, 80 years old, 90 years old, they would ask him, why were you zeicha to live so long? And the person didn't answer, I don't know. He told them why. Because they had studied the issues. If something good is happening to a person, you have to understand and study, why is it happening to me? So I'll know what I'm doing right. This is Lahabdul Elef Abdullah's. You ask Gary Player, when he when he hits a ball and he hits it good, he wants to know why he hit it good. Why was it perfect? What did he do right? And he'll study it until he knows. So he'll know what to do and what not to do. But unfortunately, life, people go through with their eyes closed. They'll just say, no, don't talk about it. Don't give it a nine horror. I just made 50 million rand last week. Shh, don't give it a nine horror. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with the person so he can know what he's doing right and what he's doing wrong. That's, so therefore, if a person has Simen Brocha, he has to try to find out why is he having the Simen Brocha. And the same thing, Lehepek, to the contrary, Chas V'Shalom. So this is the simple meaning. But the morale goes deeper. He says it's not only that. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with Midas Hadin HaKol B'Mishpat V'HaKol B'Yesher. He imbued into the world, just as he imbued into the physical nature of the world, laws and principles which are unbending. He imbued in the spiritual nature of the world that what is known as justice. And if our courts don't execute justice, that has nothing to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's courts. Justice must be executed. So that means that if a person does something wrong, there has to be rebuke for it. If a person does something right, there has to be reward. There has to be. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice is perfect. So the reward must be perfect for what was done, and the same thing, the opposite. And that's why we find that HaKol B'Mido O B'Mishkot, everything is a perfect measure and weight. B'Mido Shemaydidin Odom B'Mido Shemodad B'Midim Shodom Modad B'Mididin Loi. That exactly in accordance to the measure that he goes, that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals. Now, the Mishnah continues. And that Tesamid Beis, it states, Shimshin Holach Acher Einov, Lefichach Nikru Plishtim Es Einov. We might ask Shimshon, that was Samson. He was a shefet. He was a great, very, very great person. He was a tzaddik, a very, very righteous person. Why did it end up that he had, that the plishtim, the Philistines, went and took out his eyes? That was for a certain midah, a certain fault in him. What was that fault? So the Mishnah says, because he was holach achar einov, because he pursued his eyes. And because he pursued his eyes, that brought him, that brought a downfall to him, where the plishtim went and removed his eyes. What is it referring to? In the Sefer Shaftim states, in Perek Yud Dalet, Vayere Shimshon Timnosa Vayar Isha B'Simnosa Mibnais Plishtim. Shimshon went down to Timnosa and he saw a woman from the daughters of the Plishtim. Vayal Vayaged Lovi V'Limai Vayeme Isha Re'isi B'Simnosa Mibnais Plishtim Vato Kehu Esor Li Le'isha. So he went and he told his father and his mother, and he said, I have seen a woman from the daughters of the Plishtim. Now take her for me for a wife. Vayemele avi v'imai. His father and mother said, Ha'ein, the Chazal tell us that even though she was from the Philistines, he wanted to be megayer her. See, wanted to convert her. Vayemele avi v'imai, ha'ein b'vnei sachecho b'chol ami isho ki ato helech lakachas isho miplishtim arelim. Aren't there enough Jewish girls around? He says, this, you have so many daughters from your own nation that you have to go to take a woman from the Plishtim for a wife. Vayomer Shimshon, Shimshon said, El Aviv Osa Kach Li Ki Hi Yoshra Ve'enoy. That one take from me. Because she is Yoshra Ve'enoy, because she is perfect in my eyes. Now, three times it mentions eyes here. It says that he went Re'isi. First it says, Vayar, he saw a woman from the daughters of Plishtim. Then he goes and he tells his father and mother, Re'isi b'sim nosai, I have seen a daughter from the Plishtim which I won for a wife. And then when they said, but there's not enough Jewish girls around, what do you have to go to the Philistines for? So he said, no. He Yoshra Ve'enoi. She is perfect in my eyes. So the Chazal say that states Leso Surah Acharei Neichem. You're not supposed to go after your eyes. It says Einayim Reis V'Alev Chemet. The eyes are the spies of a person. They go out and they search and they see and they send messages back to the heart, and the heart desires. It says Leso Surah Acharei Neichem V'Acharei Levavchem V'Acharei Neichem. But this was a weakness of his. In the end, it states, this is in Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Kof Aleph, the Gemara brings, that, well, there's the whole story how he was captured, also a downfall from his wife, Delilah. But when the soldiers came and they captured him, Vayechazuhu plishtim, they grabbed a hold of him, Vayenakru eseinov, and they took out his eyes. And then they chained him and took him to prison. This was his downfall. So the Mishnah brings, you see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he doesn't do things to people. They bring it on themselves. He reacts. That Shimshon's, his was Holach Acher Einov. His Aveda was that he went, pursued his eyes, and therefore his punishment was that he lost his eyes. Now, this that it states that he pursued his eyes doesn't mean that there can't be good eyes. His problem was he pursued only his eyes. He pursued his eyes and not his seichel. The eyes see and sends messages back to the people. It says, Leisosur Acherei Naim, you shouldn't go after your eyes alone. But you've got to bring it back to your seichel, to your intellect, to your spirit, and then come to a decision as to what is right and what is wrong. The Medrash tells us in Esther that it states that the Rishoyim see and the Tzadikim see. The Rishoyim see and it brings them to Bimachri Vasa'olam. They want to destroy the world. It says, Bayar Haman. Haman saw that Mordechai wouldn't bow to him. From there, from that Ria, from that what he saw, he almost destroyed the whole world. Came into a hair's breadth from destroying the world. But the tzaddikim, and bring many cases like that. But mereis enem shal tzaddikim tuar. When the tzaddikim see, this brings light to the world. For example, it says vayisa ena vayar vinei shleish anoshim. Abraham looked and looked on the day 3 days after his bris milah, and he saw three travelers in the distance. Now, what did that do? He went out, and he brought them in, and he took care of them. And this was the great Haknosis Orchim, and it states this was a schus for Klal Yisrael forever. The Gemara goes into great length. And then another example, Vihine Vayar Vihine Ayil, when he was supposed to sacrifice Yitzchok, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no, he looked around and he saw a ram, and he went and sacrificed the ram instead. This was a great schus for Klal Yisrael in the world forever. It brings many such cases like that. So it's not that we are not supposed to see with our eyes. We were given eyes to see with. But we're supposed to look and see, but then use our seichel, use our minds. But this, he became shackled to his eyes, Shimshon. This was the Chazal tell us. This was his weakness, and that's why this was brought on him. Then the Mishnah goes further. The Mishnah says, Avashalom. Avashalom nizgoya b'sarei. Avashalom was David HaMelech's son. And David HaMelech's son wanted to revolt and to take the Malchus, to become the king. And went so far that he even wanted to kill his father. Now he was nizgoya b'sarei. He had great pride and haughtiness in his hair, in general in his beauty. Now how did he end up? Fichach nitle b'sarei. He ended up, his downfall was his hair. What are we referring to? This is in Shmuel Beis. In Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Dalet Chof Hei. It states, Ukavisholom Lohoya Ish Yofe Bechol Yisrael Halal Meod. Like Avishalom, there was not such a handsome, beautiful man in all of Israel. Mikaf ragloi ve'ad kot kodoi lohoya vaymum. From the heel of his foot to his forehead, there was not an imperfection. Everything was perfect, physically perfect. Uvegalchei esreishoi v'hoya miketz yomim liyomim ashi yigale kichovei lola v'gilchoi. When he would cut his hair, because from time to time he grew very long hair, but from time to time it became so heavy that he had to cut it. When they would weigh the hair that they cut off of him, it was the weight of 200 shkolim, so the weights of the king. I don't know exactly how much 200 shkolim is, but it sounds like it was quite a bit. So this was Avishalom. Vayvoldu l'Avishalom shlei shivonim uvasachas u'shmo tomor hiyayso ishi yifas mare. And then he had three sons and one daughter, and the daughter also was a beauty. So this was Avishalom. Now Avishalom, being the most beautiful man in all of Israel, and in general beauty was a brocha given to Klal Yisrael, vonim atem l'Hashem alakechem. So Avishalom, that was the most beautiful man in all of Israel, and plus he had a well-known beauty as a daughter. This brought great arrogance to him. Brought great arrogance to him. And this led him to do what he thought he would be able to do, and it led him to his downfall. How do we see it? And his downfall was through this. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to show him what was the causes of his averus and the people. So his downfall came through his hair. Well, how do we see this? In Perek Yud Ches, Posuk Tes, it states that when he was making war against his father David and all of their men and armies, so then he was, it says, by Yikore Avishalom Livnei Avdei David, Avishalom was riding by the servants of David. Avishalom, it happened, by Avishalom Rechev Al HaPeret, and he was riding a mule, by Avo HaPeret Tachas Sovech HaElo HaGdola, and the peret went beneath a great thorn bush, a great bush, a great tree, which was known as HaElo HaGdola. By Yechazak Reishai Va'ela, and Avishalom's hair got caught in the tree. And the parrot carried on, and he was caught, and he was left hanging there between the heaven and the earth. He was left hanging on the tree. He was still alive, but then the soldiers of David came and finished him off. Now, why is it that it happened that his downfall and his death came through his hair? Because his averus came through his hair. The Mishnah tells us. Now we see that by Shimshon, his averus came through his eyes, and by Avishalom, his avera came through his hair. Now the Maral in the Agodas Ashas and Saita explains. He says there's a similarity between the eyes and the hair. There are many things that are not similar at all, but there is one similarity. Shlema Melech writes in Keilos that the eye is never shaveya. The eye never gets satisfied, never full. You know, by most parts of the human body, there's a point of saturation, there's a point of satisfaction. There's only so much you can eat. You see. But the eye is always looking, always looking. Never gets full from looking. The hair is always growing. Most parts of the human body, they might grow internally, but they don't grow externally. A person only grows so tall, he only grows so heavy, and so forth and so on. But the hair is always growing, always growing. That's why you have to keep cutting it. Everybody has to go to the barber, to the hairdresser. Why? Because the hair is always growing. So he says, you see, by these two things, you do not find sphere or shlemus. You do not find satisfaction or shlemus where it reaches perfection. Once something reaches perfection, it stops. The hair never reaches its perfection. In other words, it's always lacking, so it's growing. And the eye is always looking, and causes the heart to desire. You go by a shop window and you want to buy something. Had you not gone by the shop window, you wouldn't have wanted to buy something. The eye sees and causes the heart to desire, or causes the body to desire. So the eye is the symbol of the desires of the body. And since the eye is never satisfied, you can never satisfy the eye. This is a sign that the desires are never satisfied. And that was the chait of Shimshon. Even though he was an enormous tzaddik, he was a shefet, and he saved Klal Yisrael. But this was his weak point. This was his setback. Because he had great desires. And those desires, he did not control them. They were not satisfied. That's why he would go after his eyes. And that brought him to various problems. In Averus. And therefore his downfall was through his eyes. The hair that grows, which also is a sign of a never-ending satisfaction. The hair is never satisfied. It keeps growing. But that, what does that represent? That represents actually the beauty of the person. And the beauty of the person, and the arrogance of the person, grows on his crown, the crown of the head. The crown of the head represents the kingship, the arrogance. And this was the problem with Avishalom, that he was drawn after his hair. That means his ever desire for more, but not more physical desires, but for more honors. And that's why he felt he should be king, he should be the melech, to the point where he was ready to overthrow his father. It's actually, and this was with his beauty. It's actually a Gemara in the Dorim that there was, I'm trying to think of who the Tana was, the God where he didn't like to eat from the korbanos, the sacrifices of the Nazirim with Shimon HaTzadik, because he says a lot of them were not l'shem shamayim. So people become Nazirim, it wasn't l'shem shamayim, it wasn't for the sake of heaven. But one time he ate, he saw a young boy, a young man who became a Nozer, and he was very, very handsome and good looking. And when you're a Nozer, you let your hair grow, but then afterwards you got to cut everything off. So he says, why did you choose to do this to your beauty? So he said, because I had beautiful hair. And one day I was by a brook and I looked in the water, and I saw it was so beautiful, I started to become misgoya. I became arrogant, and I was admiring my own beauty, and I was becoming arrogant until finally I told myself, why are you becoming arrogant in a world that's not yours? What do you have to become arrogant over? And then I took upon myself to destroy all of that hair. Well, Shimon Tzadik says this was l'shem shamayim. He ate from his sacrifice. But this is what we're referring to. So that's why it states that Shimshon holach achareinu, he went after his eyes, and he ended up with a problem with the eyes. And Avishalom, with nizgoya besarei, he was drawn after his beautiful hair, his beauty in general, and he ended up, his downfall was through that. Then the Mishnah goes further. The Mishnah says, with Avishalom further, it states that when David HaMelech's men were told that Avishalom was caught by his hair and he was hanging there, but he was still alive, in Tes Zayin, Perek Tes Zayin, Posuk Chof, no, actually first in Perek Yud Ches, Vayar Ish Echad Vayaged LeYoav. So they told it to Yoav, Vayomer Hinei Ra'isi Avishalom Toli Ba'olah, I've seen Avishalom, and he's hanging there in the great tree. So Yoav said, did you kill him? He says, no, I didn't kill him, I didn't want to touch the king's son. So Yoav says, I'll kill him. So first Yoav went and he stabbed him 3 times. The mission goes into that also, but we won't go into it at this point. But then it states in Posuk Tes Vav, Vayisobu Asorin Orim Nesek Liyoy, Vayakuz Avasholam Vayimisihu. And then 10 of the lads that were with Yoav surrounded Avasholam, and they all speared him until he died. So we see that how was he killed? He was killed with 10 spears. Now the Mishnah wants to know, Hakol b'midah, Kodesh Baruch Hu deals everything out perfectly, why was he killed with 10 spears? So brings another case in Perek Tes Zayin Posuk Chof. It states that when Avishalom was pursuing David, so he was going to attack Yerushalayim, so he came with his armies. So when David was told, so David and his armies evacuated. But he said that he left 10 pilakshim, 10 of his concubines, lishmar es habayis, to take guard of the palace. when Abishalom came into the city, he saw that David and his men had already evacuated. Now he went and he asked Achisophel. Achisophel was his main advisor to this revolution. So he asked Achisophel, Vayom Achisophel el Avishalom, Vayom Avishalom el Achisophel, Hovu lechem eitzam anaseh. He says, tell me what I should do now. David and his armies have fled. Here we are in the city. And there's nobody here. What should I do now? So the Chazal explained, he was worried that he shouldn't lose his followers, because it's not a simple matter revolting against the Melech Yisrael, the king of Israel, any king. And if his followers will get cold feet, then he's lost. And he was afraid that, because there was already mumblings that what happens if David strikes a deal with Avishalom. Look, David didn't want to kill his own son. That certainly he didn't. So what happens if David strikes a deal with Avishalom? So then to Avishalom he won't do anything. But to all of his followers, he'll hang them. Because you were rebellious. You wanted a coup. So he was and he was afraid that David would offer a deal to Avishalom and Avishalom would take it. So he asked Achitophel what he should do. Vayom Achitophel al Avishalom, boy el pilakshe ovicho, asher iniach lishmar abayis. He says, go take the 10 concubines. Take them and go to them. Have relations with all of them. B'shoma kol Yisrael ki nivashto savicho v'choski de kol asheritoch. And when everyone will know of this, make sure everybody knows what you've done. So then they will see that you passed the point of no return. That you went and you took the 10 concubines of your own father. So they will see that the gauntlet has been thrown down. There will never be any peace offered. You will never be able to go backwards, and David will never be able to go forwards. And then you'll have your army behind you. Vayatu ala Avishalom, Elso Avishalom did this. Ala Gog, Vayove Avishalom, Epilak Shovi, Vilenei Kol Yisrael. So Avishalom did this. So it was a good military strategy. Because then the people had no doubts anymore that the war was here to the finish. And they could stick with Avishalom and they didn't have to worry about that. Now, the Mishnah says as follows. Ulefisha Baal Eser Pelakshe Oviv Lefichach Nitne by Eser Lumbios Shenemar Vayis Ba'asora Noshim Nesikle Yoiv. Because he took the 10 concubines of his father, this is why he ended up by being killed with 10 spears by 10 men. So again we see the diktuk ha-din, the exactness of the din. Then the Mishnah goes further and the Mishnah says v'chein linyan ha-tova. This is in regards to rebuke and punishment, but so is it in regards to reward. Miriam himtina lamaisha shoachas. This is what we read at the end of Balaischa. Miriam waited for Maisha 1 hour. As it says, Vatesavachesim merochek. Vafichach nisakvu lo Yisrael zayn yomi bamidbor. Therefore, Klal Yisrael waited in the desert 7 days for her, as it states, Va'om leinosa ad eis of Miriam. That the nation did not journey further until Miriam was brought into the camp. Now, this the Gemara asks a question. On Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara asks, "Mi domi, hosem choreshaita, hocheshiv yemi." You say, "Have a Kodesh Baruch Hu's retribution, whether for good or not good, is perfect. This was not perfect. Miriam only waited 1 hour for Moshe. The camp, the nation waited 7 days for her. So the Gemara says, "Omar Abaye, Eimer Linyan Ateva, Eino Kain, and V'Chein Linyan Toni, Omar Rava Hachik Toni, V'Chein Linyan Ateva, the Beis of Mido, La'Elam Mido Teva, Merubu Midas Peronius." Now, what we mean is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's payment is in the same method that the person's payment was, or the person's act was. But as far as the quantity of the reward or the retribution, that changes. The quantity of reward is far greater than the quantity of punishment. The method of payment can be the same. Kodesh Baruch Hu will pay a person in the same manner that he has acted. But as far as how much, now mida teva, meruba, mimida pronius. Now the quantity of reward is far greater than the quantity of retribution. Now the Gemara brings, Taisvis brings, it's 1 to 500. Kodesh Baruch Hu pays 500 times more for an act than the punishment he gives for such an act if it was evil. 500 times, it's 1 to 500. Where do we learn 1 to 500? So that we learn, that the Sefer brings that from a posuk that we have in Kisisa. We always learn this on Tanesim, and this is the, it states, Neitzer Chesed Lalofim. And then it states, "Peikir oven oves albonim al shlishim arbeim." When a person does chesed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps that reward. That's a merit. That's a merit for 2,000 generations. If a person does evil, and the children continue in that way, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will hold that for 4 generations, the Rebbeim. So we see it's a ratio of 4 to 2,000, which is a ratio of 1 to 500. Taisus asks Akasha, he says that, it says that Miriam waited 1 hour, and they waited 7 days. He says that's not the right ratio. So he says you have to say that when the Gemara says Sho Achas, he brings with either a third or a quarter of an hour. See, when the Gemara says Shah, it doesn't necessarily mean an hour. Shah means just a time. So what? A time. So therefore, it says that they waited, that Miriam waited a third or a quarter of an hour, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu now had to pay her back 500 times for that. So that comes to 7 days. So the nation waited 7 days for her. The quantity was much more, but the method of payment was the same, because her mitzvah was giving honor and waiting for Moshe. So therefore, the nation had to give honor and wait for her. I once asked the question, but it's still not the same, because she waited for Moshe, she was an individual, but meanwhile now 600,000 people are waiting for her. So it's still not the same. Now that we can give an answer is because the Gemara says that Moshe shochu keneged shishim rabuah. Moshe was equal to the whole nation. So she waited for Moshe, that was wait, like waiting for a whole nation. So now therefore the whole nation had to wait for her. Then the Mishnah tells us further, it states, Yosef Zohar Likvores Aviv. Yosef had the merit of burying his father. When Yaakov died and he said, "Take me, Alisa Satzmaisa Mizeitchem," he says, no, he said to take me up to Eretz Yisrael, to Canaan, and bury me. So Yosef Zohar Likvores Aviv, Yosef was the one who buried him. Ve'ein ba'ochiv godl mimenu, shenema vayal Yosef Likvores Aviv, vayal imay gamrechem gaparoshim, Now, there was nobody greater in all of Israel than Yosef as far as Gedula. Gedula means stature. He was the king, viceroy. So the greatest personage in Klal Yisrael went and buried Yaakov. So now Kodesh Baruch Hu had to pay him back for that. So when Yosef died, the greatest personality in Israel had to bury him. So who ended up burying Yosef? Or at least till he himself died? Milonu Godel mi Yosef Shalinisasik Be'ela Moshe. Moshe was the one. Because it states that Vayikach Moshe Atzmos Yosef Imay. Moshe was the one that took the casket of Yosef with him all of the 40 years in the desert. Because Yosef was the greatest of royalty amongst all of Israel in the whole land, and he himself went and buried Yaakov. So now he gave that, we see what Kovet Ames is. He gave that Kovet to Yaakov. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to see that he would receive a similar measure of Kovet Ames. So if regular people would have buried him, that wouldn't have been sufficient. So he had to have Nisgagu Adover, where the greatest individual of royalty in Klal Yisrael would bury Yosef. And that was Moshe. Yikach Moshe Satz Moshe Yosef Imoy. Now the Gemara brings, Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, first of all, the Gemara brings and a few gimel. Maishno me ikore diksi vayal Yosef likfor es ovi vayalu itoy kol abde pare vohode vohol beis Yosef ochi veechov ubeis ovi. Why, when they went to bury Yaakov, it states Yosef went, and all of the entourage, the servants of Paray, and then it says Yosef's household, his brothers, and so forth. But then, Bisef, when they returned, it says Vayoshev Yosef Mitzrayim, Ahu ve'echov. Yosef came back together with his household and his brethren, v'hoder, and then later on it says Kola Olim Itoy and everyone else, all of the Egyptians that went up with them. In other words, that when they went to bury, it says Yosef was in front, Abde Paray, the servants of Paray were next, and then the brothers and their families next. And when they returned, Yosef was in front, and then the brothers of Yosef and their families next, and then the Abde Pare, the servants of Pare. Why? Amar Rabbi Yechon, B'tchila Shalei Robik Feidin Shal Yisrael Le'Nogam Ben Kovet. B'seif Shirobik Feidin Nogam Ben Kovet. It says because the servants of Pare didn't want to give honor. Why should we let them go first? Yosef was the king, but why should, what's his brothers? So they didn't want to give the brothers and their families such honor. They were more important than them. But when they came back, they saw something else. What did they see? It says, "Vayavo ad geden ha'otod, v'chi geden yesh le'lotod, omar ha'baboah." The Gemara darshins from a posuk. It says, "Belamet shekifu k'sorim la'reine shel Yaakov, ki geden zeh shemakifin le'otod, shebo b'nei Esav b'nei Yishmael b'nei Ketura." When they were going with this whole entourage, and it was a big entourage, and when they were going, as they were traveling, so the children of Esav and the children of Yishmael and the children of Keturah, these were from the Hogar, they came, kulam lemochom abou, and they wanted to make trouble, they wanted to make war. Kivan shorau kisra shel Yosef tolui ba'areina shel Yaakov, when they were carrying the casket of Yaakov, so it had on it a crown, and that was the crown of Yosef. Yosef had taken off his crown and he hung it on the casket. And Yosef was known throughout the whole world because there was a famine throughout the whole world. And they all had to come and buy from him. So once they saw the crown of Yosef on the Oren, Notlu Kulan Kisrehem, Vitolum Ba'areini Shel Yaakov. They all took the crowns and they hung it on the casket of Yaakov. Tana shloshim v'shisha ksorim notel ba'areinu shel Yaakov. And the Braisa states there were 36 crowns hanging on the casket of Yosef. And the Rashi brings, why 36? Of Yaakov. Why 36? Yud Beis Nesim di Yishmael. Yishmael had 12 princesses. Chov Gimel Alufim Nimna Be'esov. And then there were 23 Alufim, 23 kings by Esav. So that's 23, that's 35. And then what was the 36? The 36 was Kisro Shel Yosef, the crown of Yosef. My Rebbetzin once said that maybe this is where the custom comes by, you see in military funerals or others, that they take wreaths and they hang it. They would take wreaths and hang it on the casket. See, maybe that's where it comes from. Now, when they saw that, here 35 princesses and kings are coming to make war with them. And they end up, because they saw Yosef and his family, they end up and they put the crown. They all took their crowns off and put the crowns on the casket. When they saw that, they had a different respect for Yosef and his family. So that's why when they came back, they let them all go first and Yosef was in the back. Then, the Gemara says, looking for it here. Vile asik be Yosef, Elchav lehav im aski be. Miksiv ayisa iso banavatsu genan. Moses says, why does Yosef get the credit for burying his father? It says all the brothers went to bury. And they were, if Yosef wouldn't have buried, they all took a shvua to bury. They all would have done it. So why does Yosef get the credit? Now, and secondly, why did the brothers let Yosef do it? They also should have done it. Because everyone's mechuyev. If a father dies, all the sons are obligated. So why didn't they all take part? It says Yosef. So it says, Amru hanichulei. When Yosef stepped forward to take charge of the burial, and he was going to do it, the brothers started to say, 1 minute. What about us? Then they decided, hanichulei. Let him do it. Kfeidi b'malochim yesem b'behedjaitas. It's more kovod ames. It's more honor for our father that a king should bury him than us who are commoners. He was the king of Egypt. So therefore they left him. Rashi says, anichalei lisasek by kineged kulonu. Let him do it in place of all of us. Because Kfeidi shel avinu b'melech yeseh mi behedjaites shem Yosef melechu. So now we see, and Yosef really could have said, you do it because I'm the king. And it's not covered for the king to do it. See, so now we see what he was doing. That Yosef gave up his own honor. Actually, when Yaakov died, before he died, he commanded all of his 12 sons exactly how they should carry his casket. The Chazal bring, it was in accordance to the Degolim, in accordance to the way they marched in the desert. But on that he said that Levi shouldn't carry, because Levi's, his sons will carry the Oren HaKodesh in the future. And he said Yosef shouldn't carry, because Yosef is the king, shouldn't carry. See, so Yaakov really didn't want Yosef to carry, because he says, no, a king shouldn't carry. But in the end, Yosef did. Why did he do it? Because he says it's more covet for his father if I, the king, carries than the commoners. So now, when Yosef died, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a problem. Who's going to bury Yosef? The commoners. Then it'll be shortchanging his reward. So the Mishnah says he made it where Mesha would bury him. Mesha was the king. Then the Gemara says when Yosef died, Moshe, why did it come out that Moshe buried and the others didn't? Borei kama chavivos mitzvah shel Moshe Rabbeinu shekol Yisrael kula nisasku bebizo v'hu nisasik bemitzvah shenema chacham levi yikach mitzvahs. Because when it came time to leave Egypt, that was that night. That night when after all of the firstborn were killed, and Pari went and got Moshe. So everybody was busy. What were they busy with? They were busy gathering up the wealth of Egypt, the spoils. It was a free-for-all. And they were all loading up their donkeys. Moshe was Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvahs. When everybody goes for money, Moshe went for mitzvahs. He left all of that behind, and he went to try to find where is the casket of Yosef. Because this was many, many years later. And also, they didn't want Yosef to leave, so they had hidden him. So he says, "Menayin hayadea Moshe Rabbeinu heichan Yosef?" How did Moshe know? Sarach bas Osher nishtara me'esar dor. There was Sarah, who was the daughter of Osher. She was she was one of the original 70 that came in. She was a little girl then, and now she was very old. So she remained from that generation. Holach Moshe Etzlo. Moshe went to her. Omar lo klumato yodas heichon Yosef kofer. Do you know where Yosef is buried? Omru le arein shel matkas osel le mitzrayim v'kavu benivus. They made a casket of steel, of iron, and they sunk it to the bottom of the Nile. Kidei shizborchu meimov. Because Yaakov and Yosef had brought a brocha to the waters of the Nile. The Nile was the waters of all of Egypt. In order that it should be have a brocha. Holach Moshe v'omar al Sfas Nilus. So Moshe went and he stood by the Nile and he said, Yosef, Yosef, higia eis shenishba HaKadosh Baruch Hu shenigoyel eschem. The time has come when HaKadosh Baruch Hu has said he's going to redeem us. V'higia shvua shishbata shishvel. And now the time has come to fulfill the shvua, the oath that you made us all take, that we will take you out. V'alisa yasat meisai mizeh itchem. Take me out with you. If you show yourself, good. If not, then you cannot hold us responsible anymore for the Shvuah. Immediately, the Arena Shel Yosef, the casket of Yosef, rose to the top. And that's what Moshe was busy doing the whole time when everybody was running after them, the wealth. That's why Moshe ended up burying him. Then the Gemara says there's another version that he wasn't buried at the bottom of the Nile, but he was buried in the cemeteries where the kings are buried. But Moshe couldn't see, wasn't identified well where he was buried. There were many buried there. So he said the same thing, so that casket started to shake. Then the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah says further, now, that this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that Yosef must be buried by the greatest man in Israel, Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, when Moshe died, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to repay Moshe with that honor. We see here what Kovet HaMeis is. See, what it means, honor for the dead. Because here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going through all kind of acrobatics that nobody should be shortchanged in Kovet HaMeis. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a problem. When Moshe died, who's going to bury him? It has to be someone who was equal to Moshe. because Moshe is the one who gave up, went through all of the effort, and he waived his own honor. He was the king of Israel, the mighty Moshe Rabbeinu, and he gave up all that wealth in order to give honor to Yosef. So if he has just anyone to bury Moshe, it won't be b'mida she'odemodet. It's going to be shortchanged. And there was no one in Israel that would size up to this. So what happened? So the Mishnah says as follows. Umi gadol mimeisha shelinsasik be'ela amokam. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, I'll have to bury Moshe myself. Shenemar v'yikva esay begai. That it states that when Moshe died, nobody buried him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. In order that Moshe should receive the measure of honor that he gave to Yosef. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll have to bury him myself. And it states, Vayikvar Esay Begai. So here we see this principle. Besides the principle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKol Lefi Aschus, that everything that a person receives, ultimately, the many things that to us can look like reward and it's punishment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu many times pays off the Rishoyim in this world so they won't have a world to come. There's many things that could look like reward and it's punishment. There's many things that could look like punishment and it's reward. But ultimately, HaKol Lefi Aschus, this is all in accordance to the merit of the individual. But even more, the diktuk of the din and mishpat, the yosher, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice is perfect, he will not rest until it's perfect. Actually, the late Rabbi Eloy used to say over in Yiddish, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu bleibt nicht kein Baal Chayv. The Almighty doesn't like to owe debts. Doesn't like to owe debts. If he owes something, at salt he pays. And he pays perfectly. And the reward for a dover tov, the quantity is 500 to 1. See, from the punishment for something that's not good. But his justice is perfect, so therefore he measures out exactly in accordance to what the person did. So that's what it states in the Mishnah, Bemida Sha'odam Maidate, Ba Maidin in Lay. That in accordance to the measure that the person used, that's the measure which HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses. This is a great principle when it comes to the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085 and via post at P.O. Box 66226 Broadway 2020 Johannesburg, South Africa.